Welcome to the latest episode of KleptoCast, the podcast series hosted by Hudson Institute's Kleptocracy Initiative. Every few weeks, we delve into issues of kleptocracy around the world, how they affect us, and what Western policymakers can do about it. I'm Belinda Lee, and our guest today is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, Nicholas Nahamis. Nahamis was a part of the global team of journalists that broke the Panama Papers story in 2016. Currently, he covers real estate and the economy for the Miami Herald. So my first question is, can you describe the change over time in the Miami money laundering scene, especially in regards to money laundering through real estate?
Well, you know, I've been told by federal law enforcement officers that laundering dirty money through real estate is one of the easiest ways criminals look to shield their profits. A Homeland Security agent told us for a story last year that, you know, they come across real estate being used to hide money. You know, every one out of every two or three or four cases, it's quite common for them, and that's because it's very easy to own real estate secretly, you know, through a shell company, and no one can figure out who is really the owner of the shell company. And so, you know, Miami, especially in the last 15 to 20 years, has become a very desirable place to be. It has all these new condo buildings, it has new restaurants, it has an art scene, it's right on the beach. And so it's no surprise that people looking to A, hide their money, and B, have a great place to live, it's a great investment, are looking to Miami to purchase real estate.
And recently there was the geographic targeting order that was placed on Miami-Dade County. So what did you see was the effect of the geographic targeting orders?
So there was a lot of consternation in the Miami real estate community when the Treasury Department initiated this data gathering initiative that at first just targeted Manhattan and Miami-Dade. And the idea was that luxury buildings or luxury homes in Miami, the price point was $1 million, being bought by shell companies would have to declare who their real owners were. And this was, you know, in response to the fear that I just described, that real estate in Miami was being used to hide criminal proceeds. And so, you know, the effect on sales, I don't think there has been a huge one. The dollar is very strong now, which works against sales, so they're falling naturally, but it certainly woke up a lot of people in the real estate industry down here who I think have always thought of money laundering as not their problem. But, you know, now I've talked to realtors who say that they are now insisting that they know who their clients are because, you know, they don't want some transaction with a shell company to come back and bite them a year later when the FBI knocks on their door and says, why didn't you want to know who was behind this purchase? Were you willfully negligent? So it definitely has changed the perspective of the real estate industry in Miami and South Florida.
And what are some really interesting stories that you've come across in your reporting about real estate and politically exposed persons in Miami or kleptocrats using real estate to hide their assets? What are some interesting stories that you've come across there?
Well, I mean, there are too many to name or go into any detail, but, you know, just a few. We had a convicted drug lord, cocaine trafficker originally from Spain, who was busted for money laundering. And part of what he did was he bought unit after unit, I think 10 or 12 in total, of luxury condos, just as a way to do something, you know, with his money. He couldn't necessarily get it into a bank, so he put it into real estate, into cars, into luxury purchases. We've seen a lot of government officials in Mexico, including the first wife of the president, buy real estate here. And for some of them, it's interesting because the amount of their purchase doesn't seem to line up with their wealth disclosures. And in some cases, the condos are not even included in the wealth disclosures. We've seen lots of money coming in from Brazil. We've seen some convicted some people convicted for their ties to the Russian mafia buying real estate here. So, you know, really anywhere there's criminal activity, both within the U.S. and without the U.S., we find the money, some of it at least, ends up in Miami.
And even with the new GTOs, do you see major loopholes that can still be exploited by these criminals?
Sure. Well, the GTO, as it works, the Treasury Agency, FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, says that it doesn't have the legal authority to monitor wire transfers, you know, transfers from one bank to another. And so those are not included in the order. It only applies to shell companies buying homes with cash. And that could be, you know, a check of some kind, a money order, even actual hard currency. And those cases are obviously much rarer than with wire transfers. So critics of the GTO say that this is a loophole big enough to drive a truck through. The Treasury officials are obviously aware of that and have or are planning to petition Congress to explicitly grant them the authority to monitor wire transfers. But I know that ability is something that federal law enforcement and state law enforcement officers would really like FinCEN to have, so they can open up this whole new, much larger aspect of how real estate is purchased to their scrutiny.
How do you see money laundering through real estate affecting Miami locals?
Well, we've definitely seen prices just skyrocket, and at the same time, wages have stayed flat. And the difference there is because of all this foreign investment, which does create jobs and, you know, creates new housing, but it's not really anything that local people can afford. So there's, I think, some resentment on the part of locals to a housing market that is forcing them out. We just did a front page story a few weeks ago showing that for the first time in decades, people who live in Miami are actually leaving. Our growth is not being driven by, you know, local births or by people from the rest of the U.S. Moving in. We're actually losing people to other parts of the U.S. And the growth we're having, because we are still growing overall, is from people from abroad moving here. And so the idea that, you know, a portion of this money pouring in is a result of political corruption and drug dealing and weapons smuggling is, I think, makes people here angry.
Do you see this culminating in a kind of pushback on local officials who are not doing enough? Or do you see affordable housing being a topic that will maybe be a more important topic in the future, but not anything that will cause a substantial pushback in the present?
I think over the last year, the issue of housing affordability has definitely become one of the top political issues in Miami, but, you know, given that it affects people who are poorer and generally have less voting power, I don't think it rises to, I think, you know, the highest level right now. I'd say traffic is on the minds of the most people at the highest levels of government, and how to get a public transit system in place, which, you know, would be part of any solutions to affordable housing. There's also a lot of concern in minority communities about gun violence and drug addiction, especially gun violence among young people. But affordable housing is certainly up there, and as prices keep going up, it will, you know, become more and more of an urgent, pressing problem.
Thank you so much for speaking with us and sharing your insights.
Okay, great. Well, it was great talking with you again. Thank you.